fussy. So like everyone was getting annoyed, and I'm like, they were getting up.
Of course.
Like, what are you doing?
Of course. I would have, yo, if I would have had a baby in my dream, I would have, yo, I want my money back. I want the next show and give me guaranteed seats. Because I can't have no baby ruining that experience, yo.
Unbelievable.
Because that was an immersive experience.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what format you saw it in. What format I saw it in. But yeah, no, it's going to be a fun discussion. And I think there's all these subplots too. Now that this has hit, that we can talk about for our genre, that I'm excited to talk about. So I don't know. Do you want to start with that? Do you want to do something?
Yeah. I've been wanting to.
Yeah, let's do it.
Talk about it for a while, because after I saw it, there was a lot of things that were just running through my mind as to what it sort of represented, and just every aspect of this movie was perfect, yo. Everything about it going to the movies, this is what this movie's about.
And we, you know, for any of the, we talked about it a little bit, but anyone who saw any of Ryan Coogler's sort of tutorials on the preparation of the visuals understands that, like, this, a lot of thought was put into the different formats and presenting something that would give you an experience that was somewhat different depending on what you chose to see. But IMAX being the purest form of what he did. But, you know, like, I wound up seeing it in a sort of an XL, like a 70 millimeter large screen format. I didn't see a full IMAX for this one. But I thought it was visually stunning. I mean, like, this movie is, it's kind of, I'm trying to think of it this way, because the genre is not my genre by its very nature. I'm not a big vampires guy. Like, I'm not a big horror guy. But it's kind of, I'm not a big car guy. But it's like, sometimes you see an auto that's like an exotic car that's so spectacular, like a Bond level vehicle, and you just have to admire the machinery, even if you don't necessarily like dream of having that car. And that's kind of how I feel about this movie. It's like, this is probably not going to be my favorite movie of all time, but I can't help but admire the craftsmanship. And I think this movie will be, we are going to look back on this movie for Coogler as the moment where he kind of ascended into another stratosphere as a director.
To me, this movie is a modern day classic. And when I was watching it, I had seen his video on the tutorial on the number of formats this movie would be available and how he shot it. And while I was watching it, I noticed the screen expanding. I was like, oh, that's different. And every aspect of this movie, let's talk about it. The acting. Again, attention to detail with regards to the slightest of facial expressions that worked each and every time. Every part that was funny, Brian, was fun. Everything that was sad was sad. When the shot of when they're playing the music and they're going from period to period to period, everybody doing sort of the same sort of thing in their time. Everybody, that is, you want to talk about director, a person that can direct you to feel what he wants you to feel at every turn. That is what he did. That is the purest definition of a director right there.
Yeah, so I think if we want to start with Coogler, because I think that's probably the best place to start. The reason why I say I think this will be a seminal film for him is coming off of Black Panther, first off, he's 38 years old. Think about it. He's 38. Like, so he officially, to me, if we have a genius discussion about filmmakers, I think he's the next, right? If we said like Spielberg in our lifetime was probably the first and greatest, if you want to say Tarantino at his peak, Nolan certainly qualifies. I think this guy's the next one. And I think this film announces him as that, because this is not a film that should be this good and should be this appealing the way it is. It really should not. An R-rated sort of period piece vampire movie, like, that isn't Blade, that isn't like something that has a additional kicker built into it, should not be on track to make $400 to $500 million worldwide. But that's where we're at with this guy. And so the reason I think we're going to look back on it is this is the movie to me where the phrase "a film by Ryan Coogler" officially became the thing that sells the project. Whatever he does, if that's at the top of it, you're going to pay attention and go watch it because this film hit the way it did.
It's whatever he wants to do now. What did he say next? Oh, I'm doing X-Files. That's next. That's the most immediate thing I'm doing right now, X-Files. So the X-File fanatics cannot wait what he does with this genre now. Science fiction? His level of paying attention to stuff and not just doing stuff because they're cool. He's doing it, yes, because they're cool, but they mean something.
Yes. So this is a huge risk, right? This thing had a $90 million budget on it. So like, I mean, this was viewed as like a liability to Warner Brothers when they bought it. And we've obviously given WB a lot of crap for their decision-making on films. All of a sudden, they hot because they got Minecraft and Sinners in the same month. And now they're riding high. But the point is, you turn this kind of risk into this kind of reward, you can write your ticket to literally make anything because people will now believe that your name alone sells the project. And that's correct. But to your point, what makes him a genius? I was trying to think about this the other day. For my favorite directors and what I consider the best directors, what are their primary skills? So like if I say for Christopher Nolan, the biggest thing I like about him is the way he sets up set pieces. I think he's the best set piece designer and sort of take you into something practical and real, and you just sort of feel the scale of this. To me, Coogler is the best on the camera. The camera to me, like in his hands, it's the baton of a maestro. Because this movie, he's doing single shot, he's moving in and out, he's panning around. Like there's a lot happening for perspective in this film. And at some point, you just have to be like, I'm just going to sit back and see where he wants me to see. What perspective? It's incredible. That alone to me in this film was like worth the price of admission. Like little things where it's like, it takes a while for the action. So he teases that out. But like, there's that one shot of like the vampire like leaping into the air about to attack Hailee Steinfeld. And he keeps the vampire out of focus. Right? The focus is on her walking away and you see that guy lift up in the background and you're like, oh no, like, you know, it's about to happen. And then he cuts it off. And then like, it's stuff like that where like people don't direct that way, but he does. So I think he's probably the best on camera filmmaker that I certainly am aware of right now.
Yeah. I mean, there are movies that I watch from specific directors that I always admire their expertise in certain areas. I like Quentin. I don't like all of his films, but I like Quentin Tarantino films. For me, Pulp Fiction is just a classic as well.
I love Tony Scorsese. Scott. Tony Scott was one of my favorites because he did. So Top Gun, Crimson Tide. There's something about, and then he went more modern, like with Man on Fire, movies like that he did with Denzel, where like, I feel like he started to experiment with the camera itself in a way that I always found like worth the price of admission on its own. So rest in peace. Not really. I actually thought Tony was better with camera tech. So here's another one. Acting. You hit on it. So talk about what about the acting and the performances? Because I have a few notes for open my eyes in this one.
If you've been watching this channel for a while, you know that some of the things that Michael B. Jordan has done, I haven't always been a huge fan of.
Yes.
This one is like, bravo.
Yeah.
Bravo, yo. And I think it has to do with his It's just some directors can get the performance they want out of their actors, yo. And Ryan Coogler is one of those dudes. And I think Michael B. Jordan does his best work with him.
I completely agree.
One just sort of like, not necessarily proves it. I think he's talented regardless, but some of the things that, some of the projects that he's done, I haven't been, again, not been a fan of too much. But this performance
was magnificent.
If he ain't up, yo, we got to talk about Oscars a little bit later.
And okay.
Talk about some of the changes that they've made that you, it blew my mind. What are the requirements now? But there's just a whole lot to admire with each and every one of those characters. There's just so many of them that you, this is an ensemble, Brian, that everybody was at their A game right there. It's like it was just amazing to see.
So I agree on Michael B because I think, and he has obviously had a long-standing relationship with Ryan Coogler dating back to Fruitvale Station. Obviously they worked together in Black Panther as well. So, and then obviously in Creed. So
I mean, let's be real.
The way I think about Michael B. Jordan in this movie is this is also a seminal performance for him because this is the film where I think he finally took the swing and left behind the safe persona that made him a star. So he was obviously a child actor, like on The Wire. But if I look at the combination of Killmonger, Adonis Creed, and then honestly, even though it didn't hit big, his character in Without Remorse, the Tom Clancy adaptation on Amazon where he's playing John Clark, to me, those three characters are kind of variations on a theme. They're not exactly the same, but a lot of the mannerisms and a lot of the tics were starting to become like, this is Michael B. Jordan doing his thing.
I'm being keeping it real. Like, because they keep it real, that's real.
In this movie, as Smoke and Stack, he finally departs. He still does it a little bit, like at the end.
Of course.
He still does it. He's still a badass. But he leaves that behind, right, for the accent, for a style, for an affect, for a personality that we haven't seen him do before. And he succeeds massively as both of these characters in a way that, again, I think if I'm looking at he's also 38. If I'm looking at his next 10 to 12 years, I think this movie opens up for him opportunity to play different types of characters. It allows him to be more, you know, everyone's trying to map to the earlier stage Denzel, this is the movie that opens the door for him to at least try.
You like baseball? We own deck. On deck for what?
If he was to try an equivalent of a Malcolm X, I wouldn't be put off by it. If he was to try the equivalent of a Devil in a Blue Dress, I wouldn't be put off by it. Like,
I
believe that I'm like, okay, this guy has the chops and he's willing to try it. Now, I would like to see him do it without Ryan Coogler, because I do think Coogler is shepherding a lot of this for his career. But it was pretty awesome from the moment he's on camera to realize, oh, he's doing something new in this movie. Yeah, and it's really working.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt that way about Steinfeld, honestly, too. This to me like, I thought she was way better than I expected her to be.
You know what Tracy said? Hawkeye season 2 is on its way.
I agree, but this was a revelation for her skills as an actress to me. Because like Delroy Lindo, I'm like, I know that Delroy Lindo can deliver. And he does. He's fantastic in this movie. Yeah, but I know he can deliver.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the younger leads, like you're like, oh, okay. You can credibly pull this part off. And and let's save Miles Caton, because that I think is a whole other discussion. The Sammy character. That's a whole other like.
What did you think of
Remick? Oh, Remick.
Yeah, Remick.
I thought it was very good. Jack O'Connell. I thought he was sinister. The movie ultimately didn't coalesce around a single villain as much as I thought it was going to. Like when they first brought him on screen, I was like, oh, he's literally the devil. This is our way into the villainy. But then it really kind of branched out. It actually wound up being, I thought, more emotional when Steinfeld turned and then when Stack turned. I found myself really more tied into that than I was into the Remick character, simply because it was like an ensemble fight. Like I was actually really invested in, and like, you know, this is Coogler doing, so here's Coogler doing representation that's not for the sake of representation. The use of Asian characters in this is actually very it's very poignant because he's studying the actual history of the relationship between the races in that area of the country at that time. So that is not an idle, like, hey, I need to get a couple Asians on screen here, right? These people are fulfilling a role in society that he's studying with that. I found both of them to be very compelling. I had never seen them on screen before, and I was like, these characters are really interesting and the actors are really good. So then obviously I always forget her name, but the woman who played the TVA agent in Loki, you know, she's also quite good as well. So,
oh yeah, she's her star is on the rise because you see her in a lot of things, a lot of good things. It makes like the title that I saw come up on my feeds was Lovecraft Country. I don't know if you saw that.
That was what made Majors a star. I didn't watch a ton of that. No.
Yeah, but that show, she was in that show as well. And there was many other characters as well that were good. But that show, whoever watched it in its completion, there were a lot of themes that were touched on that as well, and a lot of genres that they incorporated with horror and science fiction that was just, for me, breathtaking. But this Pacinus falls along for me in terms of doing something so, like, I've never been so immersed in a movie as much as I have for this movie in a long time.
I would guess on the performances, any project, actors know actors. And so I feel like if you show up and you can just feel the energy on the set from your co-stars is at a certain level, I would have to imagine you go to that level, like, or at least you give your best attempt to get to that same level. So if Coogler sets the tone and Michael B is playing at the level he's playing at, now everyone else is kind of like, okay, I can't just clock in. I got to show up, which goes to our point, by the way, as an aside, of like, The Rock, man, everyone going to show up on that Scorsese movie. You better be ready. There's going to be nobody.
Well, I mean, I hear that other movie.
The Smashing Machine.
Yes. I'm hearing some rumblings.
Yeah. I mean, it should be decent. I'm just saying the Scorsese thing, he's up against some of the best actors in the world.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So,
oh,
like,
yeah,
if he doesn't bring it, then it's going to, you know, just bring it. Then, you know, it's going to be very noticeable.
Yeah, you know what?
Yeah, a bad performance in this film would stand out 10 times, like in Sinners, would have stood out 10 times more.
Oh, yeah.
Than a bad
performance
in, like, Brave New World.
And I'm sorry to go off topic, but I was watching, I said, let me watch this movie. Or this movie. I saw Red Notice.
Oh, you finally watched it? Oh, God.
Let me watch some of this. And I was watching it, and I was like, I got to go do something else. We're playing on different levels here. Wonmi Mosaku is her name. Annie.
Okay.
I was like, oh, snap, that's Bella Royale. That was her name, right? Bella Royale?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, snap, she looked way different in this one. Omar Benson. He's always an actor that I've seen in different movies, a supporting actor, and it was good to see him in this performance.
What did you think of pacing? Because I think one of the things that struck me about this film is Coogler's confidence. Because this movie takes its time to set the pieces on the board. It spends time with each character before bringing them to Club Juke. And then he waits as long as possible. I mean, he shows very little of the supernatural and of actual action until the third act. And then the third act, he just uncorks this, like, nonstop string and the movie pivots. But that's a lot of confidence by a director to be like, I don't have to feed the audience a big set piece. I don't have to feed them a vampire fight in the opening act. He really is like, I'm going to hold this and you're going to stay with me for an hour plus before I give you the thing you probably came for. What did you think about how he sort of set up the movie?
That opening scene sets the stage, right? Like, okay, now it's the, now what, how did that happen? What happened? You know, you, if you start that scene any other way, it's going to feel even slower. But because he got you immediately, you want to see what happened. And so he just sets these moments that obviously lead up to that. And then at the end, when he just shows them just preparing, for the juke party, everybody's just, and they had no idea this was going to happen. Right. It was just like,
he does the flashback of like basically fills in the blank of what you didn't see. It's wild. I mean, the movie is set up in a very like deliberate way, but I was like, I don't think there's a lot of filmmakers that could get away with that. I think a lot of other filmmakers, that first hour and 15 would feel too slow, would feel too boring. The characters wouldn't be as interesting, and it would lose the audience before you got to the fight. But with him, for some reason, you're like, I'm good. Like you can tell me and put highlights around all the people you want me to care about, and then I know to look for them when we get there. But yeah, it was something to feel that in the theater. And you could feel it. My audience, I was at a packed house. You could feel the tension.
And let's just put it out there, Brian. Your theaters are usually never packed.
No. And I didn't see it opening weekend. You did. I didn't. I saw it in week two on a weeknight, late at night. And it was sold out.
That's crazy.
It was sold out. But like with one notable exception, because I told you there was a baby in my showing, which was really weird. But other than that,
give me my money back.
There was basically, you could hear a pin drop. You could hear people like at just kind of no breath, just like waiting to see like what was going to happen next. So Coogler had everyone. He had everyone, in his hand.
That is exactly right. Visually, Brian, the colors, the shots were like, it was beautiful.
Yep.
It was beautiful.
And practical. I mean, I know this is like a supernatural movie, so there's a little bit of CGI you have to do for the vampires, but he kept it pretty tame. I mean, even when you get into the fighting, which is a nighttime fight, it's staged very practically. Like you don't really sense that you're like watching something like a ton of wire work or, So, and I could feel him trying stuff too. Cause like, this is a guy who's given us like the single cam Creed fight, which I still think is like the apex of sports filmmaking that I've ever seen. And we've seen styles of action that he's done in Black Panther versus Wakanda Forever. This is something different. I mean, he's trying things with the camera, even in the vampire fight. So I thought it was really interesting to see. And then there were a couple twists, right? I wasn't necessarily expecting the fight after the fight. Like he kind of gets you with the vampire fight. And then there's this bait and switch of like, oh, the clan is coming to wipe you out if the vampires don't. And then he's got to do that fight, which was actually pretty spectacular too. So I don't think this movie works as well as it does without how music is used and structured, right? And ultimately, we know music is our way into the supernatural. That's how the story is set up. That being said, he gets a great score, I think, from Ludwig Göransson, who's kind of now, who did Black Panther, but I think is now sort of having won the Oscar, I think, for Oppenheimer. He's the next one, right? So if you said like John Williams in his 90s was probably for our childhood the guy, I think Hans Zimmer took that torch and has been for the last 25 years the preeminent composer. Göransson was one of his proteges. Oh. I think this is the guy now because his scores are so different. Tenet versus Oppenheimer versus this. Like this guy can do anything. And this movie is helped a lot by his use of the banjo, by his use of guitar, by his use of song. And then they bring in a total newcomer in Miles Keaton, who's a singer by background. So he can actually sing the way that he's asked to sing in this. And it really, really enhances the film.
He tours with her. The artist's name is her. This is his thing. Miles Keaton, right?
Keaton. Sorry. I'm calling him Keaton. Keaton. Yeah.
It could be Keaton too. I haven't heard his name.
He's 20 years old. First acting role. You imagine that first acting role. You walked into this movie and did not get blown off the screen.
Like I said, Ryan Coogler is looking for something in his performance. It has to feel good. It has to feel right. So I think Ryan is going to direct, can direct anyone who is willing to go to these places, but he has to get you there, or he gets what he's looking for. When he's thinking about how a character may be saying it, you know, but it has to feel good. And so he is one of those directors that's looking for every moment of what it is that he is trying to show you, make you feel, make you have you hear. Everything is intentional.
So Oscars, I definitely think this is getting nominated. I definitely think picture and director are getting nominated. Do you think Michael B. did enough? It's early in the year. Do you think he can hold on and get onto that list?
I don't care what comes out. He needs to be on that list.
Okay.
At least nominated. At least.
I don't know if he'll win. We don't know. There's too much of the year left to say he'll win. Even, you know, to get a shot at a nomination for him would be a big deal. I definitely think picture and director you're getting. I think, well, Ruth Carter is kind of one of the better costume people. You're probably getting costumes as well. And I think Goranson's score. So I think you're going to get four for sure, at least on this. But no, I think supporting? Michael B's, it's hard to say. He's probably the best odds. I don't think Steinfeld would be good enough to get there. So I think Delroy is probably. And then the question is, was he in the movie enough to? Hollywood's weird about that. There's people who get Oscars for very small parts in Hollywood sometimes. So
Ali, he was in the movie Moonlight for like 5 minutes or 10 minutes. I don't know. He was something like, it was short, and he got a nomination.
Yeah.
So Daryl Lindo, I think, should at least get a Steinfeld. You never know, man. The way she delivered her lines and said things, she was good, yo. Everybody.
Yeah, it's the best I've ever seen her. It's the best I've ever seen her, for sure. So I think, yeah, definitely this thing will still be buzzy for Oscars. Did you have anything else about the film itself? I have two big picture go forward questions.
Well, one of the things, speaking of Oscars just recently have required whoever's voting that they need to watch the movies.
Seems relevant.
I think it's because of this. And I think it's because Angela Bassett deserved to win that Oscar, yo.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you.
I don't think people who voted saw that movie and saw that performance.
Because yeah, probably wrote it off because of what it was. Yeah.
There's just no question that Angela Bassett gets that Oscar for that.
I saw both movies, and like, it's not that Jamie Lee's bad. We're not talking about that. That movie is out there. That performance in that movie is a little more traditional Academy Award, like they like that when you go far out, right? But to me, the Bassett character is more gripping, especially when you know she's not really acting because of what happened to Chadwick. That to me is like when you see the performance with the context of what's going on. I would have given her the nod for sure.
Are any of the big pictures is the Ryan Coogler deal?
Okay, so yeah. So here are my two big go-forwards. Number one, Warner Brothers paid a lot of money to get Ryan Coogler under their roof to do this movie, right? Gave him full control, gave him a $90 million budget, which is a lot for this kind of movie. What are the odds they can convince him to stick around to do a DCU movie? And I bring this up because we know Michael B. Jordan wanted to be Static Shock once upon a time. Now,
wanted,
I don't think it has
he wanted, to. He wanted to produce, I think. I don't think he wanted to be. Did he want to be?
I think he wanted to be, yes. But my point is, if he's now in the house and he just gave you a big hit, they would be insane, especially with his Black Panther pedigree, insane not to ask him to write and direct something. And I honestly let him pick what he wants to do. What are the odds you think they can get him to do? Now, I stay satisfied. That may limit him. I'll float this out there. you know, we got all this smoke swirling around the Batman. You want to see Ryan Coogler take a shot at Batman just for the heck of it? I don't know. I would see him do anything.
Only if he'd want to.
It's his call. But I'm saying he's right there in the house. You have this guy in the house. You let Nolan walk because of your own malpractice. This guy has now come under your roof and delivered a massive hit critically and commercially. And you got this DCU thing just trying to get off the ground. You would be insane in my mind if you didn't have a conversation with him about what he would like to do.
Icon, yo.
It's his call.
Yeah. But Icon is one of the most interesting characters in terms of it spans quite a bit of lifetimes. He'd been through slavery and he had all these powers and didn't. To answer that question as to why he didn't do stuff, well, perhaps he did. But he spans lifetimes. He's a Republican. Here's my money. I want to see with Ryan Coogler's attention to detail and researching, and that is an interesting way to go.
The reason I threw out Batman is because I think the only reason Coogler does these projects is because he likes to examine social questions. He likes to examine the questions through the films, right? I mean, Black Panther does that. It's not an accident that we go to Ryan Coogler's hometown of Oakland for the origin of that film and sort of the origin of Killmonger and how Killmonger sees the world versus how the Wakandans see the world. It's not an accident, right? Ryan Coogler uses any platform in any film. This film, likewise, is transporting you back to 1932, and it's giving you sort of a social examination, right? That last line of the film about being free is not an idle line. The whole film is an allegory for sort of that struggle. And so I think it would basically be what could he find in the DC catalog that intrigues him on that level. But I think you just have to say, like, in his hands, any project is immediately bankable. I don't care what they put him on. It could be the most obscure hero that or character that we've yet to see on screen, and everyone would sit up and pay attention if he's directing. So I'm rooting for it. I think there's a non-zero chance. I don't know how high it is because I don't know if he wants to do, he's going to do Black Panther 3, obviously. He said he's doing that. But I would very much presume he's done with Marvel after that. So then it's kind of like, does he want to do another superhero type movie? But, Warner Brothers is now writing his checks. So they at least
I don't think there won't be a conversation. There'll always be a conversation. But because of some of the projects that he has, I mean, there's this project that he wants to do with Michael B. Called Mansa Musa, the richest African, richest person ever on Earth, right? So that's something interesting. So I don't know if he, but I'm sure the conversation will happen.
Okay, second one. So Miles, Caton or Catton, we'll figure that out by next show. Now, I have a prediction and I have a question. If he was to go into the superhero genre, who do you want him to play? He has already said who he wants to play, but I have a guess as to who he might play, and I don't think it's necessarily the one that he put his hand up.
I don't know if Miles will be the one. I was thinking Static Shock, actually.
Interesting. He said, well, my name is Miles, so that's who I want.
Yeah.
That's who he wants.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I don't know.
Given it's Coogler, and Coogler has typically worked with the same people over and over. It's not just Michael B. He has a lot of his collaborators who he likes to bring back. This guy's 20 years old. Black Panther? He's the right age.
How old is he?
20. He's the right age. He's the right, kind of the right look. He's got a great voice, and it's Coogler would be working with him again. If I was laying money, I would probably say this might be the guy you see in Black Panther 3, if that character is going to be brought to the forefront.
If they do that, by the time they get to shooting Black Panther 3, he'll probably be like, 22?
23, 24. Yeah, I'd say probably more 23. Yeah, 24. Yeah, it'll be a couple
years.
I just say because of the familiarity. Yes.
Do that film, and then after the aftermath of Secret Wars or whatever, if we're going to do a reboot, get a new Black Panther.
I'm with you on that. It may not be a long-standing part, which may be attractive, yes, honestly, to him. You know, because he's just breaking into acting. I don't know if he would necessarily want to be like, hey, I want to do five of these. You know, but I just have this feel, when I saw this performance and the way Coogler found this kid and kind of got him on set to do this, I was just like, I don't know, man. This has the feelings of like how he got involved with Michael B. Jordan in the first place, which is like, you know, he's going to stick with this guy. And it wouldn't shock me if he showed up in Black Panther 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Prediction. You heard it here first on the Nerd Gym Report. Brian, what do you think? I don't know if you've seen some of Coogler's response towards this deal that he's made with Warner Brothers.
I haven't, actually. What?
The arrangement you had with Warner Brothers. The New York Times reports Warner Brothers agreed to spend $90 million to make Sinners and agreed to give you a cut of gross ticket sales. Now, rare arrangement known as first dollar gross, meaning before they recoup their costs, you're getting money as well. Warner also agreed, and this is absolutely key, to relinquish its ownership of the film to you after 25 years. The Times reports, quote, some rival film companies were horrified that Warner Brothers would give a film away even after a period of time. Talk about these key components of your contract and why this was so critical for you, Ryan Coogler.
That's a great question. I mean, what I will do is I'll maybe add some context that maybe those articles I'm not the first filmmaker to get any of these deals. And Warner Brothers is not the first studio to provide these deals to a filmmaker. You know, so like I think that a lot has been made of my deal in particular. I'm not totally sure why. You know, I have my guesses.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, exactly. He's laughing. Yeah, I'd rather not say. That's right. That's right. You don't have to say.
The attention on what's happening with this project, you know, outside of it as a piece of art. And as a piece
of art,
has been very interesting. You know, but for me, this film was very important to me. As a writer director, I've made over $2 billion. I think global box office. I'm not yet 4 years old. It's taken a lot of time, commitment, energy, and I've missed out on a lot of things in my life. Making films that will always be owned by other people. For this one, because it was so personal. And because I had the ability to negotiate, you know, I asked for a few things that were very important to me for this project, you know, for what it was about and what it meant to me and my family. And thankfully, you know, I was able to get those things I was asking for from Warner Brothers.
Ryan Coogler is an inspiration. What do you think about all of that?
Look, I have the same guess he does as to why this has got so much attention. So people need to pipe down, because like I just gave you a couple examples of other directors and actors who get similar style structures. And you know what? The commonality is they all deserve it. They like you're gonna complain about Chris Nolan's contract structure or like production demands? You're gonna complain about how Tom Cruise wants to structure his product? Like, they earned it. Ryan Coogler's earned it. This isn't like some 17-year-old guy in his first film making all these demands.
And then that is the key. What did he say? I've made $2 billion.
I think he shorted himself, actually, because I think Black Panther was 1.3. Wakanda Forever was over 8. So that's over 2 right there. That doesn't count Creed. That's another couple hundred million. But I think he shorted himself. I think he's closer to $3 billion, not 2. And that's on a very limited number of films. His work rate is not super duper high. And now this movie is going to add $500 million to that.
And he said, what did he say? And none of those movies, all of those movies were for somebody else. They're going to be owned by somebody else.
Yeah.
I wanted, this was like, this is my creation. What's that movie, Weird Science? Is my creation. Is it real? Is my creation, you know?
I just feel like if you're good enough to extract that kind of value from a deal, who are we to begrudge you for getting it? Anyone in his position who had that opportunity would have done the same. So, yeah. And if Warner Brothers was willing to give him that, and now this will probably lead to him getting more opportunities to request that, Why are we stressing about that? Like that he makes more money? Who cares? Like great, good for him. You know, yeah. What we want is we want to consume the art. Like I mean,
and that's what he did. That's what
he did. Like that's what I'm saying. I'm so excited for his next 10 to 15 years. I'm like, I want to see what he wants to do. Like we floated the WB DC idea, but like I don't really care what he does. I just want to see him work. And I like during that time, I would like to see four to five more Ryan Coogler movies. Like that's what I want to see. Cause I want to see what that looks like with this guy.
And I want to see things with his name on it that he co-signs.
Yeah. That's X-Files. Like this is also why I'm like, you know, Eyes of Wakanda, I kind of have to check it out. Cause like this guy visually is so engaged and he's talking about using his own techniques for animation. After you watch something like this, aren't you at least intrigued what he means by that?
Because he's talking about animation the way we talk about animation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But that's why I'm just like, it's not on its own necessarily the story that would grab my attention. But this goes to my point. If his name is on it and he's saying, I was in the room developing something that I want to show you within animation that hasn't been done before, I will show up to watch it.
Yeah. Anything else?
Well, I assume it's five stars for both of us. Are we? Okay. I mean, it's kind of in case you couldn't tell. Yeah.
And so with that said, I know there's been some fives that have been given out to other movies that perhaps don't reach that level, but they deserve.
We haven't given many.
No, we haven't. I mean, what did I give a five on?
Well, we both gave in retrospect, we did our 10-year perspective on Winter Soldier. That was a 5. Oh, I gave Top Gun Maverick a 5.
5, yeah.
But like we haven't typically given out a lot of fives. We saved fives for legit. And then on TV, you know, 5 has been Andor. You know, 5 has been Blue Eye Samurai. No, but I'm saying we have not overused the 5.
Yeah. But what I mean to say is something that is given a 4 or 4 out of 5, those are still good films.
Yeah.
Then we might have our little things here and there, but
yeah.
But to be given a 5, yo, that's a tough. Like this, I mean, you ask people, you're gonna get 5s without thinking about it. Without thinking, it's automatic. This movie is one of those movies that will inspire and raise the bar in terms of what movies are supposed to do.
Yep.
You know why? This is why you get into the movie business.
Yeah. But this is also why filmmakers hold some responsibility when they complain about people not going to the movies. Because there's people like this out there, like Ryan Coogler, like Christopher Nolan, who view the cinematic experience itself as something they need to push forward. It's not enough to sit there and say, like, why aren't people going to the movies? Why aren't people going to the movies? And it isn't just enough to make, sometimes it isn't just enough to make a good movie. It's making a good movie done in a creative, innovative way. That's why when Nolan and Coogler and these guys are doing that, then I'm sympathetic and say, yes, we as an audience have some responsibility to meet their creativity at the theater and stand with it. But for a lot of filmmakers who kind of are lazy or kind of formulaic or kind of sitting on the technology that already is, and then are like, why don't you show up for my movie? I'm like, because you didn't earn. Yeah. You didn't do everything that was in your power to earn those dollars.
Mm.
And those dollars are limited. And I would say, by the way, right now, we won't get into the full discussion, people are going to the movies. Summer started early this year because Minecraft is going to make $1 billion. This movie is going to make $500 million. The Accountant 2 is a hit. Revenge of the Sith got re-released and made over $25 million.
Revenge of the Sith is a beauty. When I first saw that in the theaters, I was blown away.
Yeah, that first battle scene in space is actually pretty spectacular. What? That's one of Lucas's better moments. So yeah. That movie made over... There's four movies that made over $20 million at the box office this weekend. So people want to go to the movies. You got to give them a reason. Yeah. This movie gave them a reason. This movie forced people that don't normally pay attention to that genre or that type of movie to say, I got to see this. And I got to see it before it goes to streaming.
And there's FOMO because people are talking about it all over the place.
It's not dropping off. I think your number was actually out of date. You know how much the final count for box office weekend to weekend? 6% decline for Sinners. Six.
At first, I thought it was, I read 27%.
That's where it was tracking initially. It's continued to rise through the weekend. Six. It is not dropping at all.
You're getting repeat watches.
Yep.
Because of all of the different, because you, every time you talk to somebody, you're hearing a different perspective and you want to see this movie to see if you see what other people see that you weren't thinking about. So this movie is going to be taught in film school, yo.
I also think there's people, because of the way Kugler prepped it, who like didn't see it IMAX originally. And then people are coming who did see it and being like, yo, you missed it. You got to go back because you got to see it in the more expensive format. I think they're getting some of that too.
Yeah,
of people that are seeing it in the different ways he wanted you to see it. So, yeah. But again, to do that in a competitive marketplace, like with what I just said, where there's three other movies that are very successful out, almost unheard of. And to do it with, like I said, an R-rated period piece horror movie, that's, he's in ground, he's in territory we don't see.
I'm telling you, man.
Your skill is extraordinary.
And this is not going to die down. Oscars are going to get their biggest ratings. He has started a ripple effect into the industry. He is the tipping point.
I think there is a loser film out of this, though. We'll see how good it is when the reviews come out. I think Thunderbolts got dealt a pretty rough hand here. Because all that stuff that I said about people, these popular movies that weren't supposed to be that popular hitting, Thunderbolts is supposed to kick off summer, and that's coming next week. And if it doesn't have great reviews, there's going to be a lot of people that are just being like, I need to see Sinners, or I need to see Sinners again, or I need to see that first, or I need to take my kid to see Minecraft because I wasn't going to, and now I got to. I'm just saying, it's getting a little tougher, I feel like, for that movie.
I've heard good things. I continue to hear and continue to hear good things. But yeah.
But everything I just said is new except for the Star Wars re-release. And MCU is kind of like feeling.
Here's the thing.
Right?
Here's the thing. After watching something like this and perhaps seeing it multiple times, you ain't see it just once. To go back to that and it not impress you when Top Gun came out, this was really the superhero genre wasn't doing well and hasn't been doing well because people went to look how much that movie made, yo.
Yeah, 1.5, yeah.
And now you got another different type completely.
Yep.
It's not in that genre. The expectations are growing of what we want to go see. Not necessarily go see, Brian. I would say like to go feel, experience.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll do it next week, I think. I've been prepping sort of this action April pack for people. I've been watching a bunch of stuff. It's been an action month, underrated action month out there. I'll just let slip one little thing. The Accountant 2, that movie is dope. That movie is hot, man. I'm serious. I'm not kidding you. That movie is really good. So my point is there are alternatives, and sometimes they're in places you're not necessarily expecting. Like Accountant 1 is fine. Accountant 2 is a great movie. It's not Sinners level. Don't get me wrong. That's not what you go there for. But my point is like Thunderbolts is action, humor, that type of stuff. Count Two has really good action and it's really funny in an effortless way. So like, it just kind of wasn't something I was expecting to be that good. And so I'm like riding high because I'm like, man, I saw Sinners and I got that sort of master craftsmanship. And then I had an awesome time at the movies with a couple of movies this month that I'll talk about next week that are in the action genre. So it's crowded. This is what we talked about. 2025 was going to be highly competitive. I think it's proven to be more competitive as we hit the summer than we even expected.
Yeah. So yeah, this has been a special edition. I didn't even get my intro or nothing.
Yeah, you always, it's been fun. It's been fun. Go see it. Yeah, go see it. Go see it.
Yeah. And don't go see it bootleg.
No.
You know who I'm talking to. Don't go see it bootleg. Support, man. Go. Why you wanted to, you? This is why you go to the movies, not to watch it. You don't watch this movie on TV in its first. I mean, I'm sure we're gonna get re-releases out of this in another 10 years or five, whatever year you could release this.
Well, we definitely get one in 25 years. I tell you that we definitely get one in 25 years. You gotta get every dollar of that
one. What?
More money! More money! More money!
What? Anyway, yeah, let us know in the comment section below what you guys thought of this film. I'm sure, I mean, there's a lot to think about this film, but in terms of a rating, if you had to give it a rating 1 out of 5, what would you give it? Just comment in the comment section below. Just hit that like and subscribe. And yes, we'll see you next time.